Good morning. We have a good crowd. I'm glad you're here this morning. And some travelers coming back, and some from colder places, some from not as cold places. But my family and I, we managed to be away from San Angelo while the coldest, so that was good. So we're happy to be back, and those who were traveling, glad you're back also, and glad to see you again. We're excited to continue on these lessons on the home, and I think the time was going to fly by real quick. Before we know it, it's going to be March, and then we're going to be moving to other topics and other instructors as well. So we've been talking about the duties of the husband and wife, okay? And I'm not going to ask you about Chad and Randy, because I know they did good jobs. They're excellent teachers, very talented men, and their parents and their husbands, and so that's also a plus. But today, my plan is to start a series of classes concerning parenting and just touch on some general principles according to the Bible concerning the topic of parenting. Okay, that's my goal. So we have today, January the 7th, we speak a little bit on teaching and training, one of the duties of parents, and touch a little bit on entertainment and recreation on the parenting side, just very general. And then we're going to talk about child discipline also, not today, but in the following lesson. We're going to also talk about some parental mistakes, okay? If you're a parent or you have been a parent, you're going to agree that we make mistakes. I learned when I became a parent that there's no perfect parent, okay? So, and I'm not sure you know that too. So it's part of life, so and those mistakes helps us learn and do things better the next time or the following opportunity with the same child, okay? And then we're going to look, of course, at some examples of good fathers in the Bible. There's a lot of them. Good mothers, of course, and there's also examples of good fathers, bad fathers in the Bible, and of course of good mothers and of bad mothers also. Okay, so we're going to look at some of those and learn from them. And then, let's see, I think that's going to be pretty much it in general. Okay, but there's a lot of material concerning parenting in the Bible. And before we begin, okay, very good. So parenting, God's plan for the home, and we're going to talk about parenting today and in the following lessons. Isabel, have you thought about how God chose? We read John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. So we have a father and we have a son. Have you thought about this visual, or rather practical example, how they use the father and son relationship to help us understand their role on redemption? This is the role of redemption. Father, son, of course the Holy Spirit, each one had a different role on redemption and of course in creation and so on. But he uses father and son relationship, something that we can understand, something that we can relate to, and something very important, a father and a son. Okay, and deity uses that for our benefit also. And when we think about the phrase Son of God in the scriptures, you know, Jesus was called the Son of God and he called himself the Son of God many times. This is nothing else but calling himself equal with God. Same nature as God. In fact, when he called himself Son of God one time, that is registered in the New Testament, they were ready to stone him because they understood what he was saying, that he made himself the same nature as God. So they thought it was blasphemy, but no, he was not blaspheming. He was telling the truth. Father and son, same quality, same essence. So many of us, as I mentioned, have been privileged. Maybe some of you not yet, but you will. If Lord wills, you get married and have a family. But a lot of us have been privileged with the birth of a child. And before I became a father, a lot of people will tell you, your life is going to change.
Okay, and that's true. That's true. But one of the ways life changes is those of us who have become moms or dads or parents, one of the ways that changes is we acquire a new full-time job. Okay, you can be a CEO, you can be a manager, you can be a teacher, you can be a lawyer, and you name it. No job is more important than being a father or a mother. It's a full-time job. Okay, because your children are going to be there with you for many years. 18 years, who knows, 21 years, maybe some stay longer and so on. But parenting is a full-time job. So if you're married, now you have two full-time jobs. Before, you have a full-time job of being a husband or being a wife or being a spouse. And then you have the full-time job of being a dad or a mother. Now, if you, besides this, you have a full-time secular job. Now you have three full-time jobs. You have a full-time secular job, you have a full-time being a spouse, and you have a full-time being a father. This is busy. It's busy. This is not something to take lightly. It's a full-time job. Okay? We're going to spend our resources, our energy, our time with our families, with our spouses, with our children, and of course in our secular jobs. Okay? So, this is something for us to consider. I'm just trying to make sure I don't forget anything that I wrote down here. But no relationship on earth, okay, or activity on earth gives us authority to neglect our full-time job as a parent. Nothing gives us an authority, not sports, not recreation, nor friends, nor me being feeling sad or being tired. You know, there's no way I can justify neglecting my responsibility as a full-time father or mother. Okay, I'm going to focus it on the father and mother relationship. Of course, the only relationship above our family is a relationship with God. But even God tells us that we should take care of our families. It's very interesting as I think about this. I know some preachers in the generation above me that whose children, a lot of them turn unfaithful. Okay? And I'm not gonna pick on that topic, but what I wanna focus on is this. There was the belief or a trend or whatever that preachers had to sacrifice their family in order to serve the church. Okay, I don't know if that was a belief or a trend or what, but a lot of preachers thought, well, if this brother wants me to study the Bible, if this brother wants me to go do grocery shopping, if this brother wants me to do mow his lawn, and then I'll be all day long outside home, no time with my son or daughter. And a lot of them thought it was the right thing to do. Neglect family for the sake of serving the brethren. Okay? That's not the case. We need to focus on our families also. Okay? Focus on helping the brethren, talking from a preacher's perspective, but also without neglecting our families. Our children want time with us, want to spend time. Daughters want to spend time with dad or mom. You spend time. Okay, want to do activities together. They want to, and so on. Many things that they want dad to be present, mom to be there. Okay, but this is an example I wanted to touch on this type of attitude. And then there's those ministers who say, well, I'm going to live a balanced life. I'm going to serve the church, serve the brethren in a balanced capacity. Well, I'm also going to give time for my wife and my children. Okay, I'm not going to neglect them in the name of the church. Okay? God points us back to our families, to our children. Okay? Now, if today, this class, this morning, if we were to just ponder about this and decide right now, make the decision, we're going to take our parenting responsibilities, and I know some of you are empty nesters, some of you have grown children, but this is a general principle that applies for all of us. But if we were to decide this morning to take our parenting responsibilities above our friends, above recreation, above our hobbies, above our expenses, above our time, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life, covetousness, etc., etc., etc. If we were to decide this morning right now that we want to take parenting above all of this and more, we're through. We're through. There's no more to say. This is the purpose of this class, of this series of lessons, for us to put parenting where it belongs. That's it. There's no more for me to say. I can sit down, and if we say, well, we're going to change the way we see parenting, that's the purpose of this lesson. But sadly, many parents, and I'm gullible, but not enough, I used to believe that just because a child is born, mom and dad are going to love that child. I thought that was true, but then I learned that this is a cruel world. Okay? This is life. Children are not loved just because they're born. That's the sad story. Okay? You can go to a foster home and you're going to hear stories about it. Many, many stories about it. Okay? Some abandoned children and so on. Abused children. Who can imagine someone abusing a precious, innocent person? Okay? Even to the point of physical abuse. This is just unbelievable, but that's something that is normal today. So sadly, many parents have chosen, okay, because a lot of the times is their decision is not away from their capabilities or whatever, or they have chosen to neglect their children, okay? On account, sadly, of many things of less value. And that's really sad. Okay, so this is the sad story in our day. So what are some of the duties of parents? Okay, I'm just gonna focus on teaching today and mainly teaching and training. That's one of the main duties of parents today, mom and dad. Okay? So the first and foremost teaching and training that children need to receive is spiritual training. If I make a list, top 10 list of things and topics that I need to train my child on, and I like to train my child on different things, but on top of the list should be spiritual training, because if I don't get to finish the whole list, I finish at least the first and most important part of the list, which is spiritual training. And that's what the Bible focuses on, spiritual training. We're going to see those examples on the Bible where it has to be with spiritual training. The children, who God is, what God has done, and what it means to be a Jew back in that day, and today, of course, what it means to be a Christian. Okay, so it's important. So we think about it, and before we go to the Bible, I have here four examples that I want to use. But if we think about this, everything we see here, before we read, I'm going to go to Exodus 12 in a moment, if you want to turn to there. But if we think, we look around here, everything we see has a purpose. Okay? There's nothing here just sitting idle on this room. Of course, we can see the pews, and they came from somewhere, and they're here for a purpose. Okay, we can look at the pulpit. Someone brought it here, stole it, and is there for a purpose. And we can think about the windows. Someone stole the windows, and they're there for a purpose. The lighting, someone stole them, put them there, the projector, and is there for a purpose. So, you know, children, they begin to ask questions. And they begin to ask, what is this? What is this for? Who brought this here? Children are inquisitive. And they can ask the same question about different situations, different objects. And I have understood this. Okay, I know you know this if you have more experience with children. But they begin to ask questions. This is the way they're made. They're curious. They want to know. They and why. And then some. Usually the girls, they, and why, and why, and why, and there's no never-ending whys, okay, in a question for an object or something, an activity, why are you doing this? So taking this curiosity from children, that everything is for a purpose, someone brought them, they also, we can use that to tell them that someone brought them here, and then they're here for a purpose too. Okay? There is Almighty God involved in their lives. They're here for a purpose. And we teach them a purposeful life. Then we're teaching them a spiritual way of living. Okay? Now let's check the first of these four illustrations. In the Bible, there are four object lessons that are specifically designed for children. One of the aspects of these lessons are for children to be taught a lesson, rather. Okay? For them to learn. Notice in Exodus chapter 13, let's see, I don't know what I have, chapter 12 here, let's see. Oh, yeah, Exodus chapter 12. Got it, I'm here. Okay, Exodus chapter 12, beginning in verse 20, let's see, 25. Notice what the Bible says here. And the context, of course, if you remember Exodus 12, is the institution of the Passover, okay? This is way back when they went in Egypt, before they left for that in the Egyptian bondage. In fact, that probably the night before they left, or the day before, very close to the night they left Egypt. Notice what it was written. It will come to pass when you come to the land which the Lord will give you, just as He promised, that you shall keep this service. Okay, what service? The Passover. And it shall be with your children, and it shall be when your children say to you, why do you mean by this service? See what I'm saying? Everything has a purpose. They're going to see them preparing that lamb for 7 days. They're going to see them cooking that lamb, eating the bitter herbs. They're going to see sitting that night and eating all of the flesh of the lamb, not breaking any bone. And so they're going to say, what is this? Who instituted this? What is the purpose of this? Why are we celebrating this feast? Okay? So it should be when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service? You shall say, it is the Passover sacrifice of the Lord who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt when He struck the Egyptians and delivered the households. Very clear explanation and direct. Nothing is left out. This is what it means. Okay? Please excuse me for a moment. Okay. But notice the first part of verse 26. What do you mean by this service? Okay? What does this service activity mean to you? The child is asking. Because he's seeing you that leading. He's seeing mom following. What does this activity mean to you? Okay? And then this gives us a hint when what we do in church, Lord's Supper, worship service, teaching, preaching, everything we do doesn't have a meaning for us. How can we answer our children if it doesn't mean anything for us? See, it means integrity. It means what we're doing is because we believe it. There's nothing such thing as, okay, I'll go to church so that she'll become a Christian. And then I'll go there just as long enough for her to hear and then she'll become a Christian, then I can go. That doesn't work that way. Okay, we need to be the example. We need to be fully committed to what we're doing so that children are going to ask, what does it mean to you? Okay? I see you doing it. I see you practicing it. I see you believe it. Please tell me what it means to you. Okay? And then that word service is service to God as they were partaking of the Passover. Okay, so this is the first object illustration. Of course, I would say everything they did can be an excuse for teaching them. But four of them are specifically mentioned in the Bible to be used as object lessons when children had questions about those activities. And you notice these are significant activities. The Passover, okay, has a symbolic significance in the New Testament. The Passover, okay. Now let's go to the second one of this as we move on. The second one is right there in chapter 13. We don't need to go too far on Exodus. Notice Exodus chapter 13, and then I'm going to begin in verse 11. Here is another law, okay, something also significant. Okay, in the first Passover we see the sacrifice that had to be made, the blood of Christ having been shed, okay, or in this case the blood of the sacrificial lamb. Now we see one of the benefits of that sacrifice, which is redemption. Okay, notice in verse 11, Exodus 13. And it shall be when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, as he swore to you and your fathers, and gives it to you, notice that you shall set apart to the Lord all that opens the womb. Okay, that is, every firstborn that comes of an animal which you should have. The males shall be the Lord. So if it's a male, firstborn male, is going to be consecrated to the Lord. Okay? And then he's going to teach us about redemption. We consecrate it to the Lord, but we buy him back. Okay? With that redemption. Okay, now verse 13. But every firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb. And if you will not redeem it, then you should break his neck. And the firstborn of a man among your sons shall be redeemed. Okay? This went all the way back until the times of Jesus. He was redeemed back by his parents. And we'll read in just a moment about this. Okay? So it shall be when your son asks you, notice verse 14. So it shall be when your son asks you in times to come, saying, what is this? Okay? Use a simple question. What is this? That you shall say to him, notice, by the strength of the hand of the Lord brought us out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And it came to pass when Pharaoh was stubborn about letting us go, that the Lord killed all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of the man and the firstborn of the beast. Therefore, I sacrifice to the Lord all males that open the womb, but all the firstborn of my sons I redeem. It shall be as a sign on your hand, and as a frontlet between your eyes, for my strength and the hand of the Lord brought us, for by strength of the hand of the Lord brought us out of Egypt. Okay? The question was, what is this? Very interesting how God is making preparations for children to learn. How important is the following generations for God, that he's making preparations for parents to use this as a way to teach following generations. And we know by experience that it takes just one generation for things to go wrong. Okay? Just one generation. Okay? Like Solomon, it was just Rehoboam, his son. That's all it took. Okay? Just one generation. So it's important for God to take care of following generations, in this case of children. It's important, as we see here. So he wants to know about the firstborn being consecrated. Okay, you teach him about it. Okay, for instance, let me just mention real quick, notice in Luke 2, before I forget, Joseph and Mary are recorded participating in this activity. You remember Jesus was the firstborn of Mary, and of course Joseph took responsibility over him. But in Luke 2, notice in verse 22, Luke 2, verse 22, notice, now when the days of the purification, according to the law of Moses, were completed, they brought him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord, as it is written in the law of the Lord, every male who opens the womb shall be called holy to the Lord. Notice, and to offer a sacrifice according to what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. Okay? And I hope I'm not mistaken here. But he's talking about two activities here. Okay, one activity is the redemption of the firstborn, Jesus. Second activity is a sacrifice for the purification of Mary. Okay, two different things they had to offer. One for Jesus being redeemed, and one for Mary. For instance, how do I know this? Let me just go real quick, make this parenthesis as we're here. In Leviticus 12, we have there the price for the purification. For instance, Leviticus 12, let me see, verses, I'm not going to read the whole chapter, but let's see, I'm going to read from verse 6, Leviticus 12, 6, when the days of her purification are fulfilled, whether for a son or a daughter, she shall bring to the priest a lamb of the first year as a burnt offering, and a young pigeon or a turtle dove as a sin offering to the door of the tabernacle of the meeting. Then he shall offer it before the Lord and make atonement for her, and she shall be clean for the flow of her blood, that is the law of her who was born a male or female. Oh, verse 8. And if she is not able to bring a lamb, then she may bring two turtle doves and two young pigeons, one as a burnt offering and one and the other as a sin offering, so the priest shall make atonement for her, and she will be clean. Okay, this is for her ritual, okay, after becoming a mother. And then concerning the redemption, let me see if I have here the... Oh, yeah, it's in Numbers 18. I'm going to read Numbers 18. Just making here a short parenthesis. Notice Numbers 18, verses 15 and 16. Notice, everything that first opens the womb of all flesh, which they bring to the Lord, whether of man or beast, shall be yours. Nevertheless, the firstborn of a man you shall surely redeem, and the firstborn of a clean, unclean animals you shall redeem. Okay? And those redeemed of the devoted things shall redeem with 1 month old, according to the evaluation, for 5 shekels of silver, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, which is 20 gerahs. Okay, and so on and so on. So we see here what I'm trying to say. Here in Luke, we see at least two different activities they did. One was the purification of Mary as a woman, and that's where the turtle doves come into place, and then the redemption of the firstborn, Jesus. Okay, so this was to be used as an example also. You see, many teaching opportunities here. Redemption? What is redemption? Well, it's to buy back. Buying back. I'm giving to the Lord what I'm buying back. Okay, so you're buying him back how? With the price. Okay, what was the price? Well, ultimately, the price is the blood of the sacrificial lamb of the Passover. Okay, you know, so on and so forth. Teaching children, and they're interested, just picks, want to learn more. Okay, let's go to Deuteronomy 6. Here's another object lesson that it was designed for children. Very interesting here, Deuteronomy 6. You remember Deuteronomy 6, we have the greatest commandment, and then we're going to go back to Deuteronomy 6 if we have time. But notice beginning verse 20, Deuteronomy 6, 20, okay? When your son asks you in time to come, saying, what is the meaning of these testimonies, statutes, and judgments which the Lord or God has commanded you? We have these testimonies, these statutes, these judgments, these commandments. What do they mean? Where do they come from? What are they here? Okay, again, what's the purpose of this? Okay, then you shall say to your son, we were slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand, and the Lord showed signs and wonders before our eyes, great and severe, against Egypt, Pharaoh, and all his household. Then he brought us out from there that he might bring us in and give us the land which he swore to our fathers. And the Lord commanded to us, observe all these statutes, fear the Lord of God for our good always, that he may preserve us alive. It is in this day. Then it will be righteousness for us if we are careful to observe all the commandments before the Lord our God as he commanded us. You see, a complete answer, specific answer. Because they need to know the truth. We don't need to lie to them or tell them, well, we'll wait, or you're not old enough to understand these concepts. Children can understand concepts, okay, according to their development stage, but they can understand concepts, of course. So we have a commandment here again. They have this commandment. When they ask you, what are all these commandments? What are these law of Moses? What are all these statutes, these judgments, these decisions that were made? on account of this righteous judge, that he won't make mistakes. He's a fair judge. So there's a plenty of opportunities to think about this. Okay? Commandments, responsibilities, being able to hear, to understand, to obey, to follow instructions. This is what we are here for. We have a purpose, and these commandments come from God, and the purpose is for our good, for our benefit, for our welfare, that our days will be long in this earth. You see, where do they come from? Why are they here? Purpose. Okay? In fact, you know, when children get to teenage years, that's one of the most important questions. Why am I here? When they're teenagers, they start doubting their personality, their capability, they start saying, which one's my strength? Am I supposed to play the guitar? Am I supposed to run track? Am I going to be a doctor, a nurse, or what? And they start to question themselves. And then, am I good looking or what? You see, a lot of questions. Why am I here? Okay? Why, mom and dad, why did you bring me to this world? For what? You see, and then spiritual teaching to those questions. One more lesson on this before we might run out of time. And you might be guessing the fourth one is in Joshua chapter 4. Let's see. Joshua chapter 4. Now I'm just going to read real briefly there. Notice beginning verse 1. Joshua 4, 1. Okay? It says, "And it came to pass when all of the people had completely crossed over the Jordan, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying," notice, the Lord spoke to Joshua. He's a straight, direct commandment to Joshua. Take for yourselves 12 men, and this is, let me suggest the context here. They're entering into the Holy Land, to the Promised Land rather. Not Holy Land, Promised Land. Okay? And then, you know, the priest touched the water of the Jordan, and the Jordan was divided, stopped. Miracle. And then he's a commandment. Take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one man for every tribe, and command them, saying, take for yourselves 12 stones from here, out of the midst of the Jordan, from the place where the priest feeds to it firm. You shall carry them over with you, and leave them in the lodging place where you lodge tonight. Okay, carry them with you as long as you set camp. When you set camp, then you're going to leave them there. Notice in verse 6. And then Joshua gave the commandment, passed the commandment to the tribes of Israel. But he adds the purpose of this activity, okay? That this may be a sign among you, again, when your children ask in time to come, saying, what does this stone mean to you? Again, why did my ancestors decide to carry 12 stones, what is this thing? I mean, it doesn't make sense. Please explain to me this pile of stones there. 12 stones. Okay, let's sit down. Then you should answer them and say, tell them, this is no coincidence. This is no arbitrary carrying of stones around or accident. You're going to tell them, you know, the waters of the Jordan, there was one time when they stopped. Okay, they were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. You see the importance of the Ark? More important than the nature, more important than the Jordan River. Important enough for God to stop, to cut off the waters of the Jordan so the Ark will cross on dry land. And then when it crossed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. And these stones shall be for a memorial to the children of Israel forever. Okay, again, one of the when they were told to carry the stones, and then they say, okay, yeah, I'm going to carry the stones. Here we go. Okay, and he's carrying the stone on his shoulder, and then here they go, 12 men carry stones. What is this for? Well, God is thinking about teaching children. Okay? Thinking about future generations. He's not going to punish the upcoming generations for the sins of the present generation. We learned that in Deuteronomy. Okay, so he's given the second generation an opportunity for them to make a decision for themselves. Okay, also, if the first generation was righteous, they're not going to become righteous automatically just because mom and dad are righteous. He's given an opportunity to learn, but he's given the responsibility to mom and dad to teach them, to parents to teach them. Okay, Any comments so far here in these four? It's very interesting, isn't it? Having these specific mentioned lessons, okay? It tells us about the importance of teaching our children, responsibility we have. Full-time job, okay? It's not a part-time job. It's not a once-in-a-while job, like we are inclined to, or some try to make us believe, okay, that it's just once in a while. And then it's interesting, and we're going to talk more about this, the effect of that being absent on the home, on boys and on girls, okay? It's you have a comment, brother? Oh, thank you.
No, that's right.
Yes. I mean,
you know, when you talk about the importance of this role of a teacher, oftentimes we are frustrated by those questions you talk about. That children, and we all, if you have children or you've ever seen a child, you know that they are inquisitive.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes in our frustration, we shut that nature down in them, so that they don't want to come back to ask us any questions. Which means that if they're not coming to us to ask questions, they will still have questions. They will still be inquisitive, but they will go to another source mm-hmm. to get it. And that's always a dangerous manner, because we don't know the source that they may ask these questions.
Mm-hmm.
But Deuteronomy chapter 6, you mentioned that we would get back to Deuteronomy chapter 6 if we didn't run out of time. And I see the bell walk by, but Deuteronomy 6 maintains what you're talking about. There is never a bad time to teach your children. It's always a good time to teach your children. If you're tired, if you're going to bed, or you want them to go to bed, it's always a good time. When they rise up in the morning, when you're walking, by the way, when you're sitting and relaxing in your house, no matter where you are, that is a good time to teach your children. And that is a powerful lesson that parents should learn. I appreciate the class.
Oh, me too. I'm enjoying it so much. Thank you for your comment, brother. Appreciate it. And you know, the home, you see, it's an universal institution. Okay, we're focusing here on the Christian home, definitely. Okay, but when we talk about the home, the home is an universal institution. Marriage is universal. So this is a responsibility every mom and dad must take. Okay, it's not talking about only for those who are Christians. They're responsible for leading their homes or being a father. It's everyone. And you know, you might have met my sister. She's been here before, and she has about 10 years of experience teaching in elementary school. And she concludes that a lot of parents want to give the responsibility of teaching manners, teaching good manners, okay, teaching, I don't know, other moral aspects, maybe not to lie and things, not to steal or whatever, giving them to the teacher. And the teacher has, what, 15, 20 of those, and how is she going to handle all of those kids? See, it's not practical, and it's not commanded that way. And same thing might happen with the church. Some might say, well, I'm going to let the teachers in Bible school, they teach them about God. Okay, I'm going to let the preacher, let him sit in sermons, and that's all they will learn. Nothing at home. Okay? Yes, please.
I saw a deal the other day where it said the average child spends 7,800 hours a year at home and 900 hours a year at school. So which teacher should be held accountable?
Mm-hmm. Correct. That's a good point. Thank you, Brother Ventura. Yes, sir. So you see, so the responsibilities of the home, okay? Of course, at church, they're going to come and learn. They're going to be encouraged. They're going to have other like-minded children in the classroom with them. But the responsibility is going to be at home. We cannot just say, let the church do all the job, let the teachers do all the job, and so on. And because a lot of parents, they say, well, I don't want to take that responsibility, okay? Or they don't want to, okay? So it's very important and significant, this topic. We're going to read Deuteronomy 6 on Wednesday. We're going to go there. And I have here Psalm 78 first portion of Psalm 78 speaks about teaching children. It's a beautiful psalm. And then, of course, we're going to go to Ephesians 6:4. Okay, but let me see if I have something that I don't want to forget. But I'm gonna give you about 10 or 12 responsibilities from the Bible. And we're going to talk more about this on Wednesday. Okay? Responsibilities from the Bible that we have to our children. Teach them what? Okay? Of course, teach them the scriptures or teach them training in what? Okay, there's different aspects that we're going to look at. But talking about entertainment and recreation, and just touching this topic, okay, God intended as well for the spiritual development to be at home, and also for the recreation to be also based at home, okay? For children to, mom and dad spend time teaching them, mom and dad spend time playing with them. And you know, boys and girls are different. And I'm going to tell you a secret. If you have, or you might know already, who am I teaching a lot of experienced families, but little girls like to talk. And you're driving them or going with them, they would like to converse more, usually. With boys, all you have to do is spend time with them. That's it. You can talk to them and make conversation. You can, yes. But if all you did was go to the playground and run around or put him down the slide or kick the ball and not a lot of talk, they're happy, they're fulfilled. They're content because they want dad's presence. They want mom's presence. And it's been researched a lot, the different influences that give to sons, that give to daughters. You see, look at these pairs. And then the different influences mom give to sons and mom give to daughters. You see, there's these different pairs here, different lines of influence. For instance, a dad is going to teach a boy how to lead the home or how to have a trade, etc. And then he's going to teach his girl how a man should treat another woman. Okay? And then the girl is going to look at that and she's going to want a husband that would treat her the way that is treating her, with that type of respect. Okay? Because that's what she grew up used to. And then the same thing goes with mom. She also influences her son, okay, what godly, what type of wife and the attitude he should look for on a woman. And then he's going to teach her daughter the way a mother or a wife should behave at home and so on. You see, there's different combinations here to the point that if you take that, you're going to hinder them very much. If you take a mom, you're going to also hinder them very much. So both are necessary. Okay, so let's quit here for today. And here's the bell. Thank you for your attention. I appreciate all your comments. Thank you so much. Looking forward for Wednesday.